This is Dr. Olivia Cook, and you're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase. This is your host, Gregory Proctor. Today's episode, episode 54, entitled D&I, which basically means diversity and inclusion, is a topic which we will talk a little bit about today with our featured guests. As we all know, nowadays, you likely hear the words uttered at least once by typically everyone. Diversity is become a household name, particularly as it relates to all the things that we have going on this year in our society and here in the U.S. The phrase gets tossed around so much that we have to consider, has it lost its meaning? Because when we talk about D&I, we're talking about people who feel marginalized and excluded on a daily basis. And typically, this is a deeply personal issue for many. It's often confused with the idea of belonging, which is something that has, in its entirety, been kind of left out of the context. And as we begin to talk with our featured guest today, we will basically kind of understand that diversity is like being invited to a party. Inclusion's like being asked to dance and belonging in the dance when no one's watching. In other words, it's not enough to simply have a seat at the table for marginalized folks, especially when they don't feel safe or believe that they need to act like someone else in order to fit in. And so a little backstory about our featured guest before I introduce her, because I have so much respect and admiration for her. And she's probably going to laugh about this. And I'm only going to tell this joke just to kind of ease the tension, because she's probably going, oh my God, what is he about to say? So to our listeners, our featured guest is someone that I met through LinkedIn. Obviously, she works at one of the schools that my daughter was looking to attend. That was one of the ways that I kind of connected with her through LinkedIn. Later on, she made some meaningful posts on LinkedIn, which kind of inspired me to basically reach out to her and ask at that moment in time if she would be on the podcast. Now, this was some months ago, and obviously with things transpiring, and of course, everyone knows, COVID really shook up the world, and it just kind of made people think in different ways of, you know, how do we kind of adjust our day-to-day lives and figure out how we just move forward. And so the timing was not right back then. And I took it upon myself just here recently, based on school being out and things being a little bit more freely for those that work in the educational industries. And I reached back out to her, and this time she said yes. And so with that, I'm going to basically give her what we call the grand slam introduction. As most people always say, Greg, you are like a hype man when you introduce people. But I have to say, with regards to our featured guest today, she deserves every single accolade and word that I'm about to express to our listeners today. So as we look at our special guest today, we find that she is a multi-passionate, innovative leader who thrives in helping institutions and organizations to develop their human capital to gain a greater efficiency and productivity. As a multi-passionate, smart, and savvy, authentic leadership researcher, she also seeks to transform, inspire, and encourage others in purposeful ways on how to use their gift to make a difference. She's a native of Auburn, Alabama. She's a tri alum of Auburn University. She holds a bachelor's degree, polymer and fiber engineering, as well as a master's and a PhD in public administrations and public policy. She has a long list of local and international organizations who she serves as fellowship and has received awards. this list stems from the University of Auburn Board of Trustees, Alabama Power, Women Business Enterprise National Council, Black Public Administrators, KPMG, and so forth and so on. Some of the most important things is that she's been a lifelong scholar. She continues as a professor for various campuses and departments. She's also a research on leadership and style development and process focused on underexplored populations such as African women. Her research extensively examines the authentic leadership style developed experiences by investigating factors that may influence preferred leadership styles, which she will have to explain that to us a little later on. Beyond her industry and academic accomplishments, she's also fluent in conversational Spanish. She's a proud member of Delta Psi Theta Sorority. These endeavors have basically assessed her with the great global accolades that she has, as she has collaborated not only here in the U.S., but also in Canada, Europe, and Africa. She lives by a quote, which we'll kind of focus on as well. When you have more than you need, build a longer table, not a higher fence. There's a seat at the table for everyone. And so, without further ado, Dr. Olivia J. Cook, I don't know if I did a good job introducing you or not, since I've been waiting for, like, I don't know, 6 months to talk with you. But do you have any opening remarks?
Oh, thank you so much for the Grand Slam introduction, Gregory. I do greatly appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. I do want to make a few little just changes to what was said, just because I want to be clear. So my research focuses on African-American women and their leadership style development. And also the sorority that I'm a part of is Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. So just want to make sure that is clear. But other than that, it was a great introduction. I appreciate you for waiting and inviting me to be on your podcast. I'm excited about the topic that we're getting ready to jump into today, and also exploring this diversity and inclusion realm more and offering some suggestions on how to move the needle forward on both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I appreciate you providing that clarification for us, because sometimes when you're doing so many podcasts in a single day, things tend to get a little bit lost.
I understand.
So basically, you being a native of Auburn, and as we kind of talk about diversity and inclusion, and obviously there's been so much emphasis on the social injustice that has gone on in our society today, but can you kind of elaborate or walk us through kind of your upbringing there in Auburn, you know, through your adolescent years? I mean, what was it like in seeing the diversity and inclusion, at least during the early stages of your growth?
Yeah, well, I've always seen it here, and maybe because I've always sought it out. Mm-hmm. Just because I went to a local high school here, and I graduated with over 400 people in my graduating class. So we had a lot of different people from different backgrounds, and even our senior officers, and I was a senior class officer at my high school. We had people from all different backgrounds who were senior officers. Someone who was Asian, someone who was white, myself being Black, and Indian. So very, very diverse senior class officer council. So for me, it was there because I sought it out. I wanted to have, you know, different experiences and learn different things from different people, just because my experiences and my growth, that can definitely be one-sided. And then that's just me, right? I want mm-hmm. to learn from other people and, you know, see the world through their eyes and learn more about their culture and their things. So in terms of growing up here in Auburn, I felt like my experience has been on the upside, and one mm-hmm. that I cherish, and one that has definitely helped mold me into being the woman that I am today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's definitely something that we kind of share in common. Obviously, myself, born and raised in Mississippi, I don't live there anymore, but we certainly had a multi-diverse cultural school as well. And I was always intrigued with, you know, folks that were not, should I say, born and raised here, or should I say, for that matter, born and raised in Mississippi, because those that came in as foreign students and things like that, they always offered new and exciting things from, you know, the way they dress, from the way they talked. I mean, it was just always intriguing. And so I can definitely relate to what you were saying there. So as we begin to kind of fast forward and fast track, at the time that you were moving forward in your career, what drove you into the polymer and fiber engineering career?
Well, I didn't have a career in polymer and fiber engineering. I just majored in that while I was getting my bachelor's degree. But I was really good at math and science while in mm-hmm. high school. I graduated within the top 10% of my class. And I always knew that I wanted to go into STEM field. My dream before changing it early on was to become a biomedical engineer and develop prosthetic limbs for people in developing countries. And so I knew I wanted to get an engineering degree, and then I wanted to go to medical school at some point. But of course, like I said, that dream changed as I became more sort of in tune of who I was and who I ultimately wanted to become. So I decided to major actually in chemical engineering when I got to Auburn University, and I stayed in chemical engineering for about 2 or 3 years. And there's this weed out class called Principles of Chemical Engineering, and it definitely weeded me out. So I was in the class for maybe 2 or 3 days. And on the third day, I decided I wanted to change my major. Still wanted to stay in the STEM field, and I changed it to polymer and fiber engineering, which was a smaller department. It was maybe around 6 to 8 of us who graduated with me in the department. So very intimate class of folks, and very diverse, actually, in terms of both faculty and people who were in our major, just holistically, whether that be undergrad or graduate, very, very diverse student body. So I decided to stay there because we dealt with the makeup of different polymers, both natural and man-made polymers. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, like I said, develop these plastics, these prosthetic limbs for folks in developing countries. And so I was more so on the plastic side and looked at a lot of these biodegradable materials and how to use them and their effects on different things in people, and especially on our environment. And so I stayed there for a while and ultimately graduated with a degree in polymer and fiber engineering, but then later switched. Instead of saying I wanted to go to medical school, I knew I wanted to be a Dr. Cook one day. And right. I decided to get my master's in public administration because I like to write. And I also love the aspect of government because it touches so much of our lives every single day. And mm-hmm. so I went on to get my master's, graduated in about 1.5 years, and then went on to get my PhD after that and finished last year, graduated in 3.5 years. And I have been excited about just my career and the trajectory since then. So it's funny you ask that. I get a lot of questions about polymer and fiber engineering and how did I choose it? How did I go from being an engineer to mm-hmm. being in public administration? But I like to tell people I like to use both sides of my brain. I operate on both sides. I see things in so many different lights, and I have a lot of different perspectives on things. I can be very technical, and I can also be very sort of just wordy and, you know, include, you know, different things and aspects of sure. the government side and the public administration side. So I feel like the two have really married together in a good sense and within my career and within my educational journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Which very, very insightful backstory there that you've shared with us. And I think it kind of leads into the next question. I mean, you know, we see and hear your passion for the motivation and the drivers that you had and the determination, which is just quite commendable. But where did that passion begin for helping institutes and organization develop their human capital, you know, for the greater good, for, you know, improving efficiency and productivity? Like when you grew up in your childhood, did you see like, you know, businesses, were you working in businesses that were extremely efficient, or your parents, you know, kind of walk us through what that was like?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the passion stemmed from, of course, my parents. I grew up in a two-parent home, both loving parents, high school sweethearts, and seeing both of them really embrace their career and show me different aspects of their career, it was definitely influential for me and made me want to do exactly what they were doing. It's funny, all of us went to Auburn University. All of us have a master's in public administration, and me and my dad actually have both a master's and PhD in public administration and public policy from the same institution, same program. So we're all in this together, I like to say.
Right.
And so really seeing them and how they have been able to be so successful in their career and also create meaningful careers, ones that have purpose, really helped me sort of structure and feel and get a calling to really help people, because that's what, you know, all of these institutions and organizations and things are made of. They're made up of real life people. And that's where I feel like the true calling should be, the true message should be, and the true help should go towards people. And so that's where my focus has been on. And of course, it has come from my parents, seeing them navigate this and seeing them care for people, lean into people and listen to them, and really just be good, purposeful leaders in everything that they do. That has definitely shed some light on my career and helped me to ignite that fire that's been within inside of me, and making sure that whatever I do, I leave it better than the way that I found it. And I leave people better than the way that I found them. So it's always trying to do better and to be better and to help other folks do better and be better as well.
Right, right. Well, that is, there's kind of this coincidental, you know, circumstance as I'm listening to you talk about that. I'm also reflecting on the fact that my parents also, you know, it was along the lines of, you know, they didn't bring us up to see color. They didn't bring us up to have, you know, as we would call it, racism or anything like that. You know, we were put in positions where our parents provided not only, like you said, a two-parent home, which was structured and probably governed by, you know, the church. And then also on top of that, we were not, I won't say oppressed, but we never felt like we were left out, because there was always a way for us to achieve what we wanted to achieve as long as we put our mind to it, you know. So you didn't always get the new pair of shoes. You didn't always get the latest big wheel or the fanciest new car, but hey, you had a car, you had shoes, you know. These things did not come across in a way to where it put you in a sense of an outcast. And it almost sounds like from the way your upbringing was and how your parents were structured, they provided you with all of the opportunity for you to succeed in everything that you put your mind to, without that stigmatism of saying, well, you know, you're not feeling like you're belonging in this box that people tend to put people in, whether you're rich or poor, or black or white or blue or green. You know, sometimes, you know, people just have that type of notion of, they feel like they're in that box because of materialistic or because of education or because of not having a two structured tiered family home as it relates to your parents. And so that's rather intriguing, that you expressed that the way that you did, because I think coincidentally, you know, as we talk about, you know, diversity as a whole and how people feel like they're in a box and sometimes they're marginalized within these communities and whether or not they feel like they belong, you know, my historical aspect of that is I never really felt that way because, you know, I had opportunities to do what I wanted to do. And it almost sounds like you had those same opportunities as well. But in the aspect of what you're doing as your job and as the research that you are putting forth, you're in a position now to where you're basically trying to ensure that you bring forth that influence and that awareness. Can you walk us through what that is like as you're dealing with not only the research aspect of what leaders should be doing, but also how you're working with organizations to help them understand how to treat people fairly?
Right, absolutely. So as sort of stated earlier, my research really focuses on the authentic leadership style development process. And so for my dissertation, I looked at seven African-American women leaders who are in the executive role, and particularly the president's cabinet at Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities in the state of Alabama. And so I researched a lot of these leaders. It was a qualitative multiple case study approach. And I decided on doing this because I wanted to see, how did they get to this position? How did they get to this executive role? You know, because a lot of folks who get in higher, you know, education or higher administration, they want to ascend up this ladder. I've never met anyone who just says, okay, I want to stay at my entry level position, you know? So I wanted to learn more about them and learn more about their story. And that's the point that I wanted to really focus in on, the story and this authentic leadership style development story. How is this developed? How are you being authentic in what you do and what you put out there? And I was amazed at all of them because all of them had this sense of authenticity and this sense of belonging, this sense of I'm here for a reason, on purpose, for a purpose, you know? And so for me, the research has definitely sort of taken a big light to really focus in on, because it sheds light on the story aspect. It sheds light on the authentic, you know, this leadership style development aspect, where I look at the antecedents, the triggers, and the personal history, and some of those things, self-identification factors that that the theory sort of builds itself upon to understand the person's experience more. And so I really focus on that, trying to get a hold of the literature and what it says, and also applying it to African-American women, because of course, sometimes you can get in some of these leadership positions and you may assimilate. You may feel like you have to act a certain way or be a certain way to get a certain thing. And so I really wanted to understand them more to see how they didn't assimilate and how they were able to show up fully themselves and really know, show up fully to the conversation, you know, regardless of what other people may think. And so that is what really, I guess, helped the research and helped me even more, because one day I looked to be in a senior leadership position just like that. And so in terms of helping and talking with organizations about this, you know, this topic and this area, is really talking about the story. And I know I keep going back to the story, but that's what really matters. And that's what people connect to. People connect to, they may not remember any, you know, statistic, any fact, any data point, but they'll remember your story and how it made them feel and how authentic you were in sharing your story. And so that's what I have been doing with my consulting, helping different organizations learn their people. Because as I said earlier, the people, Those are who are running these institutions and these organizations. They are who matter the most. And they're the biggest capital of them all, you know. So learning your people, assessing them, helping them to ascend to these leadership positions, and not sort of, you know, as you were saying earlier, checking this diversity box, but actually ascending to the position because they have earned the position, you know, and not just checking something off the list, is really helping them learn the person more and providing them with different opportunities to get to that position, and providing them with different professional development seminars or workshops or webinars to lean into to learn more about them. So it's really all about the person. It's all about getting to know you better, getting to know others better while you're getting to know you. And it's sort of an holistic sort of viewpoint in this authentic leadership process. And it's a very not necessarily straightforward, but a cyclical process, because this sense of authenticity is a sense of forever evolving. You're forever learning yourself and unlearning things about yourself as well. So I've been using, like you said, the research to definitely learn more about this aspect, and particularly applying this to African-American women, but also helping other organizations learn more about their people and helping them to ascend to these leadership positions that a lot of us, you know, want, and ascend to these positions in a very strategic process and in a meaningful way.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think you're definitely spot on there. And I'd love to be able to get my hands on that research and obviously dive into it, because, you know, one of the things that I'm kind of looking at today is that we, you know, our cultural, you know, as a minority community, we've talked about, you know, the historical aspect of what has transpired and all of things that we feel that provides, you know, or excuse me, that has kind of put us in an inequality type of situation. But this past year, you know, despite the death and despite, you know, the pandemic and the unprecedented times and so forth and so on, there's been so many good things that have come out of bubbling conversation to the surface and really starting to take action in a way that can hopefully provide positive and meaningful journey for everyone. I mean, we look at the fact that we have our first African-American HBCU vice president. We look at the fact that now we have the first opportunity to take what has happened in 2020 and begin to build, you know, really what the future should be like for all ethnic type of cultures and personnel. So if we don't take anything away from 2020, you know, despite, like I said, all of the bad things, this is one piece that I hope and pray that as we move forward, it becomes somewhat easier for everyone to step up to the table and have a seat. Because if not, we've gained nothing in all of this tumultuous time that we've had for, whether you call it 400 years or the past year or whatever time period you want to put on it. We have to be able to put this in the past. And I'm not saying forget about it, but we've got to accept whatever lessons have been provided, and we need to grow in a manner that's going to help fulfill the right type of destiny for us. And I guess my question there is, and I know I kind of got on a little bit of a tangent, but my question there is what are your thoughts surrounding that? Because your research has served the purpose of authenticity as it relates to these leaders. And now these leaders have to be saying in the back of their mind, we're at a defining moment in time. What are we going to do with it?
Right. Well, I think the big thing is what America is crying out for is for people to listen, and who want to listen and who want to lean in, because this sense of belonging is feeling supported It's feeling seen. It's feeling acknowledged. And it's ultimately being valued as a person, regardless of how you look, where you come from, who your parents are, or what have you. It's this sense of, like I said, belonging, because this can ultimately improve your health, your happiness, your motivation, and everything else that, you know, we want to get out of people and working in, at these institutions and organizations. So when people feel like they belong, when they feel like they're seen and they're cared for, and their leader is actually leaning in to help them and to listen and to, mm-hmm. you know, really act as that support structure for who they are as a person, you get more out of the person and you get more out of life, you know, within itself.
Right.
Because not only are you leaning into to them and to your colleagues and to your employees, you're also, in a sense, you're leaning into yourself too. You're figuring out, why do you care? And you're figuring out your why, you know, and mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. you're doing the things that that you're doing, and how do they matter, and how are they applicable to your life as well. So it's a twofold aspect when you ask me about leaning in to, like I said, to your employees, colleagues, or what have you, and learning how to be this really purposeful leader, this authentic leader who is able to join hands with somebody else and invite them to a seat at the table.
Right, right, right. Well, Dr. Cook, we certainly have enjoyed this this short moment of time with you, and we'd like to open up the floor for, you know, final remarks or any takeaways that you'd like to leave with our listeners.
Absolutely. Not necessarily final remarks, but I guess the biggest takeaway is I encourage anyone who's listening to this podcast to really, I guess, do some self-reflection. I know we have 2 more days into 2021. So mm-hmm. really taking some time to look within. And like I said earlier, learning and unlearning things about yourself this year. I always find time to really self-evaluate and do some self-assessments during this time of the year, because I always try to be better than the Olivia who was last year. I want to be better than that girl, you know. So definitely take some time to look within. And as you said, take out some of these lessons from 2020. This has definitely been a different year for all of us. And so really focusing on some of the things you've learned, practicing some gratitude and thinking some of these positive thoughts to help you usher in 2021 and to be a greater year for all of us. So that's the biggest, I guess, takeaway that I would urge everybody to do from this podcast, because being authentic, it sounds easy, and it's a term that I feel like is thrown around by a lot of different people, but it's mm-hmm. actually a Greek aphorism meaning to know thyself. And so really taking that time to know yourself and know who you are and who you want to become, it'll definitely serve you greater purpose in whatever you do in life.
Very well said. Very well said. And with that, to our listeners, I would just like to end on a quote: by acting compassionately, by helping to restore justice and to encourage peace, we are acknowledging that we are all a part of one another. And people have heard me say this time and time again, we're kind of all cut from the same cloth. I mean, I look at my history, my family. I mean, I have an entire melting pot throughout my family. And certainly, what we've talked about today, just skim the surface on some of the insightful tips that Dr. Cook has provided to us. And I hope that we all take that to heart, explore ourselves, and begin to look at our future in a way that we can offer that compassion and empathy with, regardless of who we deal with in life. Because at the end of the day, we all belong at the table, and we should have a seat. So, Dr. Cook, I am going to give you a virtual hug, because guess what? It has been, you know, wanting to catch up with you and really have, you know, something like this that we can have a memorable moment. And I certainly appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you too.
Alrighty, for everyone that is listening, this has been episode 54, D&I, entitled Diversity and Inclusion. Thank you very much. Everyone, please be safe. Happy New Year to you all. Bye-bye.